Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, everybody. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran today on the Cochran Show. Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett, Jen DeSalvo, Steve Grzanich, Sandberg, Joe Romano. We're all here. Everyone's ready to rock. It's a beautiful Thursday morning here in the Chicagoland area. We got a lot to do today, including breakfast with the Blackhawk. Brent Seabrook's going to be with us. Erica Harold, who is the candidate for Attorney General from the Republican primary, will be with us.
Good to have her back.
Pat Brady and Eric Anderson. So there's a lot of things to do today. We've got a lot to get through. But I'm excited to be here. And to do radio, of course, with Andre and Dave in the Allstate Showcase Studio, beautiful studio on Michigan Avenue.
We're happy to have you back. And again, it's light. This is called sunrise.
I know right?
You're used to working in the dark.
There's something great about the idea of there's two darks. There's the nighttime dark, and then there's the morning dark. And they look you come in here, they look obviously the same, but they don't feel the same.
They don't feel the same.
They don't feel the same.
No.
I'm learning.
Especially when the temperature... Like on a January morning when it's like 15 below.
As opposed to 80 in August.
Yeah, then it's okay.
80 in August is okay. I can understand. I'm learning this week, Dave. I'm getting on Lower Wacker Drive, I'm like, this looks familiar. This looks like I've been here 4 hours ago. But I'm like, yeah, it's a different feeling. So lots to do today. So let's get to it. Let's start with, of course, the 6 at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, let's get to the headlines today. President is expected to announce tariffs on foreign steel today, 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum, with some possible exceptions carved out for Canada and Mexico. The news has the country's steel industry excited as U.S. Steel quickly announced they're going to reopen two blast furnaces in Granite City, Illinois.
How about that? Yeah, hundreds of jobs coming back.
I can't wait to see their marketing, the billboard. They're like, new blast furnaces.
We're back.
It's an interesting story, and it continues to develop as even people in the Republican Party are criticizing the protectionist vibe that the president's giving off when it comes to tariffs on foreign steel and aluminum. But we'll see what happens, because this is something that the steel community here in the U.S. steel industry is very excited about, very celebratory.
Sure. So. And the flip side of that, though, is how many jobs will be lost by the protectionism across the country?
That's
tens
the question,
of thousands,
right?
Perhaps.
That's the beauty of Donald Trump, is it's always perhaps or maybe.
Right.
Could be. You don't know with him. He is a very skilled negotiator, and he seems to use the public to get what he wants, meaning he'll throw something out on Twitter, or maybe he does a headline in some form or leaks it himself. So everyone gets up in arms, and he's able to almost use that as leverage to get back to the negotiating table. So be interesting to see, of course, what Steve said. There's still a lot of conflict around what it means for the tariffs moving forward.
The art of the deal. Now, initially, Canada and Mexico will be excluded from the new tariffs, but if NAFTA talks fail, they're going to face the same tariffs as the other nation. So
how is that not extortion? It feels like extortion.
Yeah, it's like A plus B equals F.
Right.
You know?
It's clever negotiating. Yeah. It's not an extortion.
Art
extortion's so 90s.
Art of the deal.
Art of the deal, 2018. Number two. There we go. Whack. Adult film star Stormy Daniels is taking the president to court. She's suing to clear any doubt over whether or not she can talk about the alleged affair with Trump over a decade ago.
No.
Nothing to say about that? Now we'll move on from that. I mean,
right.
What a ridiculous story.
Karen Conti was in here yesterday, and we asked her about this, and we said, okay, now wait a minute. So they had this deal. She signed the deal. The lawyer signed the deal. She received some money from this deal, but he never signed the deal.
He never signed the deal. What I think is interesting about this story, and it kind of broke last night, was that it came out there was a secret order that the president's lawyer put in, essentially saying, trying to put a gag order on Stormy Daniels after she had filed this lawsuit. And it's just, to me, it seems a distraction. But it is amazing to think of a story of an alleged affair that is the fifth or sixth story in a day. I mean, it's a kicker story. And today, the president's affair. Like, that's not how it was back in the day, but for some reason, that's the way it is with Trump.
It's become page four, maybe five.
Three. The Florida legislature passed a sweeping gun control package that now sits on the desk of the governor. In it, raises minimum age for purchase, extends waiting periods, and sets aside funding for mental health counselors and for arming school staff, i.e. teachers. So maybe think twice, class clown.
Wow. No kidding.
Teachers don't need guns. They've always been armed with very strong coffee breath. That's always been enough for me.
Right?
I feel like that's enough.
When I was in school, in Catholic school, the nuns had large yardsticks.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, you didn't want to get smacked with one of those.
That's a good weapon. You're right.
The NRA is against this package, so there's still no word yet on what Governor Scott's going to do. So,
can I just localize this for 1 second? So yesterday, there was a big unveiling on behalf of AT&T. So Rahm Emanuel and Governor Rauner were at the same event. Last week, Mayor Emanuel and all the aldermen signed a letter to Governor Rauner saying, please sign the gun bill, making better gun restrictions in Illinois. Yesterday, during this photo op that they had for this completely separate event, Mayor Emanuel hands Governor Rauner the same letter.
Unbelievable.
And I guess words were exchanged between the two of them, and that was the end
of it. We had somebody on the download not too long ago who talked about the conundrum that it is for the governor to sign a gun bill a week before the primary, and there's so much that goes into that, and for the mayor of Chicago to come out and put pressure on and use space to do that, knowing full well that it's politically not inconvenient, but it's a difficult decision for a governor who's not sure what his constituency wants. That I just feel like it's a little disingenuous for the mayor to act as this is important. Show your conviction. He's not unlike the abortion bill. He's trying to get the governor caught in some sort of political quagmire.
Right. And to his credit, Mayor Emanuel said he understands that he probably is waiting until after the March 20th primary to sign something.
Something tells me March 21st will be a big day for signing stuff. Four. The McDonald's in California turned the golden arches upside down to make their sign look like a W for International Women's Day. And this is also happening on their websites and marketing, too. McDonald's says they're doing it to honor women everywhere.
How about that? They're going to do it at 100 other U.S. stores, which is pretty cool.
There's a lot you can say about that. There's a lot. I mean, I think that's a great statement, and I think it's cool. But I think there's a lot to say because a lot of single moms and women of color work for McDonald's. So there's a lot of other ways to honor women. That's all I'm going to say.
It's great. With in the pocketbook?
Yeah, in the pocketbook, or let them take home a couple cheeseburgers or something. Yeah,
I immediately saw this and I thought, well, is McDonald's in distress in some way? Has Hamburglar been kidnapped? What's going on?
Hamburglar, yeah.
It's like the Batman signal.
Six out of 10 managers of U.S. restaurants are women.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. There's a whole thing. We'll unpack that at some point. Yeah. That's interesting. This weekend's daylight savings time. You're going to lose an hour on Sunday morning.
Boo.
Which sucks because, that's an hour that you're going to lose on Saturday night when you're dreaming of what you used to do back in your 20s. Everyone always says, oh, I'm losing an hour. That could have been such a great night. And I'm like, you were sleeping. You didn't really change it.
It's 2 in the morning,
right? Yeah, it's 2 in the morning. I always feel like I'm that guy. I'm like, oh, man, it takes away 1 hour from bar time. Wait, I haven't been in a bar in how long? No, what am I talking about? That's not something that's in my life.
But it didn't. I used to bartend during college, and they'd make us stay open an extra hour.
Oh, they would. Oh, so they found loopholes around it, huh?
Yeah, they'd run it like it was still Saturday night.
All right. Okay, last one. A new study says that our brains stop making cells at the age of 13. Sorry, I forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah, you're going
what? What happened there? I just lost it. What were we talking about? No. That's it. That's the 6 and 6.
That's it!
That's all today for the top 6 and 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Another night with nothing to do. We can't get stuck at home again. What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochrane show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows
I love it,
are
Nick.
Good. What's
Nick DiGiulio on the line right now to talk about, of course, the big weekend movies coming to your movieplex, including A Wrinkle in Time, the big Oprah Winfrey thing. Nick, welcome. Good to talk to you, bud.
Yeah, morning.
All right, so let's start there. Let's start with A Wrinkle in Time. As we talk about the movies that are coming out this week, this seems to be the most anticipated of the lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on a book that's a big bestseller. It's basically about three kids who go on a journey. Two of the kids are brother and sister, and their father, played by Chris Pine, has been missing for a bunch of years. He discovered a new planet using time travel, and they're helped by three sort of astral travelers, played by Oprah Winfrey, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling, to help find their father, and they go on this adventure, and there's evil in the world and all kinds of weird planets. The pre-word on this is horrible. I've heard colleagues of mine say that we've finally found the first big-budgeted horrible movie of 2018. So
it kind of has that look, right? I haven't seen it.
It looks terrible.
Yeah, it's got a weird.
It's a very popular book, and you know that they're going to be kind of desperate when Oprah's doing the talk show circuit to plug it.
She's interviewing herself.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on from Wrinkle in Time. Other films coming out, not getting as much publicity because Wrinkle in Time has kind of sucked up all the publicity for this weekend, but The Strangers, Prey at Night, Gringo, Thoroughbreds. Talk about the movies, the other movies that are out outside of Wrinkle in Time.
Well, Strangers, Prey at Night is a sequel to a horror film that came out a few years ago called The Strangers. Creepy home invasion movie. I happen to have a phobia of home invasion. When I was a kid, I was like 5 years old, I saw someone trying to break into our back door, and it freaked me out. And ever since then, I have recurring nightmares about home invasion. So any movie that involves home invasion freaks me out. And the first Strangers was a solid movie, but it was a virtual remake of this French film called Them, from 2007 or 2008. And that's one of the scariest movies I've ever seen. So this is the American sequel to the American remake. And it's another home invasion. This family goes to a cabin, and of course, someone knocks at the door, and it turns out to be three masked maniacs who terrorize them for an hour and a half. This could go either one of two ways. It could be like really great and well made and terrifying, or it could be cheap and stupid. The first Strangers movie was somewhere in between. It had moments of scariness, but if you want to see like a really scary movie about that same thing, rent the original French film called Them, and that's a scary movie. I don't know what this one's going to be, but Christina Hendricks is in it, so it'll be nice to look at.
There you go. Talk about Gringo and Thoroughbreds. I've never heard of any of these. Yeah.
Well, Gringo is a movie about a guy played by Daniel Oleolo, who is working for this pharmaceutical company, and Joel Edgerton and Charlize Theron play these executives at this company who have developed this. They've developed this marijuana drug, a cannabis pill, and they're trying to make deals with these people in Mexico to distribute it. And so they send David Oleolo down to Mexico to do the deal. What they didn't tell him is that they were also working with drug cartels. And before you know it, he's in the middle of shootouts and he gets kidnapped and all hell breaks loose. The trailer is very funny. Joel Edgerton's brother co-wrote and directed it. And I believe it's his first debut as a writer. The trailer is very funny, and I actually hear pretty solid things about this one, and that's that.
And Thoroughbreds?
Thoroughbreds is the one that I'm most looking forward to. It's been described as a combination of Heathers and American Psycho, and that's enough for me.
That's good,
enough for me.
Yeah, right.
It's about a couple of teenage girls who were friends for a little while, and then they rekindle their friendship by going on a crime spree and basically going nuts and eventually killing people. Anya Taylor-Joy, who starred in a fantastic horror film from a couple of years ago called The Witch, and she was in Split with James McAvoy from last year. She's making edgy movies, and I really like that. And one of the other things about this movie that is really of interest is that it's Anton Yelchin's last film. Anton Yelchin, if you remember, from, you know, the Star Trek movies and the young guy, he died in a freak truck accident where he was crushed by his truck. And he was very young. And this is his last movie. It was the last movie he completed before he passed away. So this is his last performance, but this is, this is one of those edgy, sort of a low budget, crazy film. When I hear it's described as Heather's an American Psycho. This is number one on my list for the weekend.
I love it. You've convinced me. Nick DiGilio, of course, Nick at Night. You can check out his wildly popular film club and the screening of Little Shop of Horrors, which is coming up on Tuesday, April 3rd at the AMC Rosemont 18. We'll have much more on that as we get closer to the 3rd.
And I want to mention really quickly that it's the director's cut of Little Shop of Horrors with the alternate ending that the studio made Frank Oz, the director, change.
Awesome.
And we've got the full director's cut with the insane alternate ending, which is fantastic. And so that's the one we're going to be showing on April 3rd.
All right, that sounds good. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. Okay, man.
All right, there we go. Nick DiGilio, always great to talk to Nick. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get headlines. We'll continue to roll here on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning here on 720 WGN. Andrea Darlis, Dave Bennett, Steve Brzanich, Sandberg, Jen DeSalvo, everybody's here. Joe Romano. Pat Brady's in the house, which is always good to have Pat. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk with him coming up, of course, in the 7 o'clock hours. Erica Harold joins us as well, the candidate for the Republican nomination for Attorney General. So we'll talk about that coming up here in the 7 o'clock hour.
Right.
The Fight for Air Climb coming up on Sunday. And it's a win it, the great WGN radio team. And now there's two teams. Patty's got a team, too.
Apparently there is. Yeah.
I didn't know there was. I did not know that. This is a big deal. And this is something that WGN radio has done for a number of years. I feel lucky to have done it twice now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not doing it this year because my wife is out of town and childcare and the whole thing. But I will be climbing stairs in spirit.
We'll miss you because I remember that blur going up the stairs past me. And I said, who was that?
Right,
that was
right.
Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. But it's Sunday morning at the Presidential Towers, presented by United Healthcare, the annual American Lung Association Fight for Air Climb. And you can still register or you can pledge online at WGNradio.com/events or fightforairclimb.org.
Do you feel extra pressure because your name's on the team?
Nope. Well, here,
like, you know,
about,
like,
no,
if I start thinking about it, Justin, then yes, I will.
I start running.
How about if you look back and you see Enid to win it? You know, you see all these shirts kind of behind you. Are you like, come on, let's go? Are you kind of a taskmaster in the stairs?
No, because you really don't see the climbers around you in the stairway.
No,
they
you just see you guys are in
they
your zone.
You
it.
See a kaleidoscope of weird shapes in your eyes as the sweat drips down your forehead.
You know, that's a great point because I'm taking a little like hand towel with me this year.
Smart,
smart.
Or maybe I'll wear a headband, like a 60s retro headband type thing,
like you Jim McMahon.
Yeah, you should do it like the kids do the pub crawls. You know, dress up in character and costume, and you should do the stair climb dressed as your favorite movie character.
You could do a different character for every tower. Superman, Batman. Yeah.
I think that would become a little bit time consuming.
Yeah, you got an elevator ride down. You got time to change. You got time, you know.
I guess
different colored tights.
Coordinated.
There's a lot you could do, Dave.
Tights. You know what always amazes me is the Chicago firefighters in full gear with all their gear. And they're running up these stairwells.
It makes you feel really small when you're having a hard time on floor 20 of the first tower.
Oh, God.
And here come the firefighters past you in full gear.
Uh-huh.
And you're just like, let me take a real quick break here. I need 5 minutes. Do you ever stop? Do you stop? Are you a guy who do you ever like stop at a floor and be like, I need to catch my breath? Or are you a guy that just keeps going?
I think I stopped in the fourth tower a couple of times last year just to kind of...
Yeah.
Wipe the sweat off and gather myself a little bit. Yeah, I mean,
you don't judge, though, do you? I mean, the people who
nobody's
are
judging.
Behind
nobody's
you.
Nobody's
judging
anybody. Oh,
I've been stopping anybody. On, like, the, you know, the second flight.
If there's any judge, I'll tell you where the judging comes in, is the people who need to pass you.
Oh, okay.
And so there will be people who are actually doing this for time. If you can believe this, Pete Zimmerman, my producer on The Download, he and his wife, they do it for time. They're trying to beat their time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to not die. You know, there's like that's the idea. It's great. And I've talked about it on this show before that I mean, it's amazing feeling in your body when you're done. You feel like you accomplished something, but it's challenging. It's a great challenge, but it's challenging. But Pete and Molly, they go, They're done before I even get done with the first tower. And they're like, well, we got 26 minutes. Great. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, the
you
way
do they got to go. Where do you find the, you mean they have the thing on your shoe that tells you how fast you're going? You
know, so do you stay to the right or the left if you want people
well,
to pass
it,
you?
It depends because the stairwells vary because the railing's on the left in two and it's on the right in two of them.
So if you want to go fast, stay away from the railing. Is that typically the deal?
They will pass you on the outside. Okay. And what you do is, the way the sound carries in the stairwell, when somebody's 10 floors below you, you hear them coming. And so as that sound gets louder and they get closer, you just step off to the side or just get it, let them go by you. And
I do remember the first year I was very psyched up, to do this. I didn't know what to expect. This was a couple of years ago. And I remember one of our colleagues here who
came
out the, and they don't work anymore. They came out the gate so fast, right? Mm-hmm. They were like, yeah, and they were gone. They were like, they had a pace to them that was a lot faster than I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going way too slow. Like, I am walking, I should be jogging.
Dave?
It wasn't Dave.
Okay.
And I got to maybe the 30th floor, and I came upon him who was done. Like, he was done. He was just like, he was at the landing of one of the stairwells. Uh-huh. It was a tortoise in the hair kind of thing where he was just like, like sucking wind.
Was it Cochran?
It wasn't Cochran. No.
I want to know who this is.
And so you have to pace yourself. There's a pace to it. You do not have to feel, you don't feel bad if you're going slower than everybody else. That's what I learned, because at first you're like, oh, this is super easy. I've done 12 stairs. This is so easy. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the key is start off pacing yourself.
Yeah.
Because after you get warmed up and after you get into a rhythm, then you can pick up the pace a little bit. But if you start out really fast, you're going to be paying the price
pretty
quickly.
And that's what our former colleague was doing at the time.
Oh, that's who it was.
Yeah. So,
okay. Yeah.
So anyway, but that's what I saw. I was like, oh, that was, you're going way too fast, and a burnout kind of feeling. But I don't know. There's something great about being the community of it and all the people that are not just our team, but just seeing all the other different people who are running for different causes. And when you go to the different landings, they'll have messages at every stairwell that are supported or sponsored by that tell every person who's climbing, you know, what another team is climbing for, someone who was lost to lung cancer, and it's really it's inspiring.
It is, no question about it. You know who should be climbing with us this year? It's Pat Brady.
Oh God,
Pat Brady seems like a climber. You seem absolutely. Like a climber.
I did the what was the one they did in November? I did it with Senator Kirk
at the Willis Tower.
The Willis Tower, yeah.
Okay, but, then you could do this,
Dave. You'll appreciate this as a sports guy. I had a college football Saturday. The Sunday before I did the walk.
Would that be a party?
One of those 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Right.
So it didn't go so well, about floor 60.
Oh, okay.
Hey, commenting politically?
No,
or
some
just
Coors Light burps about floor 62.
What are you guys all doing about noon today? We're going to be training for this.
Are you training?
Yeah.
There's a lot of training going on
stairs.
Right now.
Yes, there's a lot of training going on.
I love the training because you get to go, and this year I hadn't done any, because you're doing it in the Trip Tower here, and we're leaving the Trip Tower, but it's amazing to see the history of how dingy this building is.
Oh, my God.
Like, going up the stairs, you get up to, like, the 28th, 29th floor, and you're like, nobody's up here.
You have to go to different stairwells.
Yeah, you do.
Because the stairwell ends, then you have to go across to the other end of the building pick up the next stairwell.
It is so creepy. It's the creepiest experience.
They should have like a docent on every other floor saying, okay, well, this happened on this floor, and this happened at, you know.
Like a tour guide, like an architecture.
Exactly,
tour.
Yeah. Like you're at a museum.
All right.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be cool.
I'll do that.
Cool.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
This is my karaoke jam, Andrea.
I love it.
Finesse. I'm working. It's hard. It's a hard one. I've done it a couple times now.
Do you have the moves, too?
I'm working on the moves. My son has the moves. My 10-year-old son is my Cardi B, so that works out really well.
I straight up thought this was Bill Biv DeVoe or whatever I first heard it.
See, the video of this song, which is great, is a homage to In Living Color.
My cousin brings her kids now to hip hop class, which I think is super cool because they're, you know, these are white Greek kids from the suburbs and now they're doing, you know, hip hop dancing.
The hip hop dance class is the hot dance class at the different dance places around town.
Really?
Yeah. And my son was doing, he might have been doing modern.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And that was not the hot class.
No.
That was not. That may have been a mistake on our part.
You know, probably like, better moves, though.
Yeah, he had already done the hip-hop class at one point, so we're like, let's try something else. And then we went in, and it was just, it was all girls. All third grade, fourth grade girls and my son.
Yeah, but that's okay.
There's nothing wrong with that.
That's okay.
There's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying it was not, it's not, they're not playing the hits and
dancing.
Right, he wants
like the hipper music.
You go in there and they're doing instruction like, are you ready to twirl?
Right.
Twirl.
Or plie. Or plie. Sure. Exactly, right?
Pat Brady. So, you know. Pat Brady's in studio. Pat, we got a great hour coming up here talking politics. We are 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks, the Illinois primary. There is a lot to talk about. You know, before we get into it, you know, what are people going through at this point? You, of course, as a former chair of the GOP party here in the state of Illinois, I mean, does this, what usually is happening a week and a half out when it comes to campaigns?
Probably two things. The candidates are working hard. They're hitting every event they can in the last days up to it. I think that they're getting their ground games together. And probably the thing that's most apparent to most people is we will be inundated with ads from here until next Tuesday at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock.
Are campaigns cutting new ads? Is it going to be, just running the old stuff?
Yeah, and this is election cycle too. There's a lot of money in these campaigns on both the sides in the governor race. So I think you'll see new ads probably up till 2 or 3 days before.
A lot of different outfits. Yeah.
Particularly the Democratic side is the numbers are so close with JB and Chris Kennedy and Dan Biss that it depends. You kind of gauge who's attacking whom to figure out who might have poll numbers.
Yeah,
That always bothers me too. If you remove yourself just as a viewer, I just want to see an ad on the candidate and what you're going to do, whether it's Erica Harold or Pat Quinn or J.B. Pritzker, whoever it is.
So boring.
I don't need, you know why? Because I don't want to have to figure out, okay, so this one's attacking this one and this one's attacking this one. I don't even know who the original ad is for because there's so much time spent attacking everybody else.
Well, that's why they have the tagline at the end that no one pays attention
to. Paid for by Pat Brady.
Yeah, believe me, no, not by me. But the reality is those work.
Do they really?
Is that, obviously,
I don't want to have to figure out who I'm watching.
If they wouldn't do it, if it didn't work, they're focus group and poll tested, and they work, and they've worked forever, and they've worked since Lincoln ran, and they'll continue to do it. So
how does it poll if you play? So you say you see an ad for, say it's Pat Brady, then there's a furniture commercial, then there's the same ad for Pat Brady, then there's another commercial, then there's the same ad. What is the point of replaying the exact same ad every other one?
Just to get your message across. But, you know, Eric's going to be in. Eric Edelstein's going to be in. He actually, this is his area of expertise.
He
probably
give
you a better answer.
Okay.
Yeah, but to me, it's just you get, like any messaging, you repeat the same thing over and over and over again.
What kind of events are the primetime events for candidates at this point? You know, when you say they're hitting events and they're crisscrossing the stage.
A lot of debates.
Is that what they're looking for in the last 2 weeks is to get on stage and
it depends on the race, too. I mean, for the Governor Rauner, he's out doing being governor, which you could argue are political events. And there's a lot of debates right now. And they've already made a lot of the party rounds.
The incumbents have, of course, the advantage because they can schedule a lot of events close to Election Day and be in the
news
cycle.
A lot of ribbon cuttings,
right?
Yes. a lot of bridges being built. I just saw a headline yesterday, a downstate person that's running just brought a big chunk of money to extend I-57. So there's a lot of, it's amazing what gets done the last 2 weeks.
Do you think that
all the good numbers, especially in the city, you get these great numbers about unemployment and
everything comes out.
Everything's all good, and then not so good afterwards.
Because we're in the Chicago market here, and obviously we're inundated with certain ads, and we're hitting it. If you watch the 10 o'clock news, it's hard not to see, you know, 5 minutes of this stuff. When you talk about other markets in the state of Illinois, downstate, in Springfield, same thing. I mean, are they pushing different kinds of ads?
No, it's the same ads, but it's cheaper to buy down there. But the reality is the vast majority of the votes are in the six counties north of I-80. So there's a lot of ads. This is a big market. Yeah, but pretty much the same as a lot of radio downstate.
Really? It's going to be an interesting last... I mean, when we talk about the last week and a half, do candidates shy away from doing debates as they get down to crunch time, or is it better to be on stage and have that opportunity for a debate with only a week to go?
Depends on if you're winning or not. If you're winning, you don't want the debate. If you're not, you want the debate. And if you can't get the debate, you scream out. Like they did the Democrats in the governor's race, J.B. Pritzker canceled a downstate debate. I think it was WCIA. And
oh,
the
champagne.
Other two, yeah, champagne, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Go Illini.
Yeah.
Still talking about that Arizona game from how many years ago?
2005. Down by 15 points with 3 minutes to go.
Yeah, right.
But, and so the other candidates obviously make a lot of noise about it. Jeannie Ives is making a lot of noise about having a debate. Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense if you have a lead like the governor has to have a debate and something might go wrong.
All right, we'll continue. We'll have Erica Harold will be here, and we will also continue our conversations. We'll talk everything about the primary that's coming up.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I've been stuck in motion, moving too fast.
Good morning. It's Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran today here on 720 WGN. But no worries. Andrea Darlis, Dave Ennitz, Grzanich is here. Steve Grzanich.
Yeah.
Jen DeSalvo's in. There's everyone is here. Sandberg, Joe Romano. We got the full crew. Pat Brady as well in studio for his check-in. He usually here on the Cochran Show every Thursday. Good to see you.
You too, buddy.
And then also, Eric Adelson's going to join us in a bit. In studio right now, Erica Harold. She is running for Attorney General in the Republican primary, which is coming up here on March 20th. Ms. Harold, thanks for joining us here on the Cochran Show. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess we start a good conversation would be like, what do you see the Attorney General's role being in 2018 and beyond? Has it changed? And, tell the world why you want to be our next Attorney General.
I think people are looking for an attorney general to exercise independent judgment to make the office less partisan, because right now you have political figures in both parties who are able to sort of use their jobs and offices to further partisan agendas. But I think a lot of people want there to be at least one constitutional officer that is sort of above the law and has the ability to hold both sides accountable.
How do you do that? Because obviously we have seen in the last couple years now, decade plus of family relationships, and,
sure,
and not just partisan, but family relationships.
Absolutely.
With the current attorney general. But the governor has come out and said that he wants you to be the next attorney general. He wants to give money to your campaign. How do you have an independent office when the governor wants you and acts as if you're part of his establishment?
Well, the reality is that the attorney general is an independent constitutional office, and whoever wins on both sides of the aisle, they will receive the support from their party. And so we do have an attorney general that is elected in a partisan election. But once the campaign ends, it's important to actually set forth guidelines and rubrics within your own office for decision making. So I've set forth several guidelines that I would use to decide how do you determine whether to file a lawsuit? How do you determine whether to get involved in an issue? For me, it would be, is there a constitutional or statutory issue of Illinois law at stake? Is there another entity that's better situated to act? Are all Illinoisans' interests directly impacted? And if those things are all in play, then you act. It's not about partisanship and who supported you, because both the Republican and Democratic nominees will receive support from everybody in their party.
Right.
Erica, kind of a segue to that. We talked a little bit about this last time, conflict of interest. How do you initiate? I know a lot of this will fall on lawmakers, but Democrats and Republican, and not just Mike Madigan, but most of our state lawmakers have other jobs. How would you set forth laws that make it so my law firm or their law firm doesn't get the no bid contract for, the highest building in Chicago or the most expensive?
Well, when you file for office, you have to file a statement of economic interest. And I think that economic interest needs to be more detailed, because it needs to provide disclosure of more entities with which you have economic interest. So, for example, right now it says, who's your employer? I work for a law firm in Champaign-Urbana, Meyer Capel. But I think it's important, if you work for a law firm, to also detail some of the clients that you have, because the current form doesn't necessarily ask that. And those are the kind of relationships that you're trying to get into. And I'm more of a disclosure person, because I think when the public has that transparency, they can hold people accountable. But without that, then you're not able to make independent judgments.
Yeah, and the conflict of interest and ethics, of course, playing a big role. We're seeing a lot of, I don't want to say scandal, but controversy around some candidates about their conflict of interest, what they do in their side jobs, and how it affects what they do. There's no there was no legislative inspector general.
Right.
If you're going to look at the record of the current attorney general, both parties will say not much has been done about public corruption, and that falls into ethics. For you, do you see that being the role of the attorney general to get in and to monitor and make sure that those ethical violations are in, you know, in step and that they're being monitored and looked at?
It's absolutely the role of the attorney general. The attorney general has statutory authority to investigate when certain types of evidence of misconduct occurs. But the reality is the General Assembly has not given the attorney general as much authority and as many investigative tools as are necessary to do the job proactively. So the General Assembly should give the attorney general the ability to convene statewide grand juries to issue subpoenas, because without that, you can only do part of the job.
We live in a very crazy time right now. I know anti-bullying was your platform in 2003 when you were Miss America, but should there be and will there be, if you're Attorney General, tougher penalties for online crimes, cyberbullying, school threats, things of that nature?
I would focus more on policies and trying to help schools and parents navigate those issues, because lawsuits tend to be the last resort when you're talking about an incident that's occurring in schools. And there's a big jurisdictional challenge of if somebody posts something at home on Facebook, who has the ability to monitor that?
Right.
And I'd like to see schools have part of their honor code, what the kind of content that somebody places on social media, because it's a little bit more difficult for schools to monitor things that happen at home, but they are able to say, part of being an ambassador for our school, if you want to participate in student council or athletics, is how you use your social media content.
Pat, let me bring in here. I love the history of this office, the Attorney General. I mean, it's been Lisa Madigan for a couple of years now, but before that, it was really a Republican go-to. I mean, if you think about the Attorney Generals of the past, and I think of Jim Ryan, I think of others that were, I mean, it seemed to be a foregone conclusion that the Attorney General in the state of Illinois was going to be Republican. What changed?
Well, the Madigans changed. I mean, Lisa Madigan got elected. She got elected with virtually no experience against Joe Burkett, who ran a very good,
right,
close campaign.
He
was a career prosecutor, now is an appellate court judge. And with the help of her father and her name, she won. And when she got in, she did a good job politically. She turned the office into a consumer protection office, which is a good politically in this state. And by a lot of accounts, some people think she did a fine job. I tend to agree with others that think she left a lot on the table, including public corruption and the crime problem, which I think is a lot of reason that the people are looking for a change. But as a Republican, maybe we can get back to that now that the party's actually looking to the future with candidates like Erica that represent a change in the Republican Party. I think some youth, some Harvard educated person with her background, and that has great ideas, great on substance. Obviously, you just heard her for the last 10 minutes, knows what she's talking about, and has it is good at saying it. So to me, I'm excited that we have a new face, and a new face that might represent a change back to
when
I grew up.
When you start looking at, and from your perch at the top of the party, but also now as a consultant, and you look at the Republican Party and with the names you threw out, Burkett and Jim Ryan and the others, you have seen a shift in the sense that used to be, I mean, like I said, it was
a law and order
foregone
office.
Conclusion. Yeah. You think about it now, does Erica and candidates that are coming up now represent a new Republican Party? Is it an outgrowth of the Republican Party of the past? Where are we at when it comes to Republican politics in the state of Illinois?
Well, I hope the principles are the same, and the people that join the Republican Party have a certain core group of principles they believe in. I don't think those have changed. I think what we've seen in this election on the far extremes of the party, the Jeannie Ives candidacy, the racist, homophobic ad she put up, that doesn't represent the party that I grew up with. And some of the fringe candidates, the Policy Institute and those other folks are supporting, that to me is not the Republican Party. To me, you look at someone like Erica, a younger person, a diverse background, that to me is what the party is all about. And she's a solid conservative, and I think that the future.
All right. We'll get back to Erica and the conversation we're having here on the Steve Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman, in for Steve.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I got a new girlfriend.
Justin Coffin in for Steve Cochran this morning with Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett, and the crew here on 720 WGN. Pat Brady in studio. Eric Edelstein is here as well. And also Erica Harold, who is a Republican running for Attorney General in the state of Illinois, coming up here on primary March 20th. Let's continue quickly before we introduce Eric just with Ms. Harold. You know, the Office of Attorney General is taking on a different... There's much more with the Trump administration coming out of Washington on what the states have to do to protect themselves and also protect their constituents when it comes to the laws or repealing laws or changing regulations and putting it on the state. The office is changing. Do you sense that? Do you feel as a Republican and having a Republican administration that you have an advantage, or is it going to be difficult to do this job in a Trump era?
It actually doesn't change the way I think the job should operate. I believe in the principles of federalism. And so I think it's the job of the Attorney General to absolutely stand up to any federal administration if it's exceeded the scope of its constitutional power. But if it's just a policy disagreement, I don't think it's the role of the Attorney General to try to obstruct policy where there might be a disagreement, because the state has limited resources. There are real issues that you have to focus on for your state. And so if it's a policy disagreement, I think you've moved into the arena of pursuing political issues as opposed to focusing on constitutional issues.
Erica, and we know you're focused on your race as well, but are you watching it all on the Democratic side? It's such a crowded field. And I also want to know, we know mudslinging goes on everywhere, but you had an experience with a Republican in Winfield Township who used sexist and racist language toward you. Are you surprised in 2018 that we're still dealing with this on International Women's Day, I have to ask?
Yeah, right.
You know?
It was surprising to hear language that was that graphic and I think that offensive. But unfortunately, the reality of running for office as a woman of color is that you are subjected to comments that are offensive. And on some level, you almost become desensitized to them because you want to focus on the issues that you're trying to set forth and explaining to voters why you would be a great attorney general. But on some level, you do have to enter the arena a little bit desensitized. And so it's only when you're stepping back and other people are shocked that you actually take that moment and say, yeah, that was really awful.
Right. Right.
Eric Edelstein's in studio. Eric, you know, as we were talking with Pat, he was talking for you.
Oh, God, again?
Yeah.
You wouldn't believe the candidates you endorsed.
Really?
Right. But he did.
Just slip me the list later, will you?
He talked about Lisa Madigan, and, you know, he disagrees with some of the candidates on the Democrat side that says she did a good job and she was a good attorney general. As we you know, continue to talk about this office, has it, I mean, Pat mentioned it was, she's really made it a consumer protection office. Mm-hmm. How do you feel that Lisa Madigan has done in her tenure as Attorney General?
Well, I think it's right. I mean, I think there are limitations. You know, she's gotten knocked for the public corruption piece. I think there are limits to what that office can do statutorily on the public corruption. I know there's a disagreement some people have on that. I actually think she's done an okay job. I don't think in the race for Attorney General, which is going to be really high profile. Obviously, it's not the marquee race. But I think it's going to not be a referendum on Lisa Madigan. I think it's going to be a referendum on what Ms. Harold just talked about, which is sort of this federalism versus state in the era of Trump. And I think the challenge for the candidates, and it'll be a really interesting debate, is it policy? Is it the role of the Attorney General when you have a Justice Department that's rolling back women's rights, rolling back immigrant rights, rolling back environmental standards? The state attorney generals, including Illinois, have sort of banded together to be this force. I think that'll be a fascinating debate in the fall campaign.
But don't you think that'll be the debate if your candidate, Kwame, wins? But if it's Pat Quinn...
I think he'll do the same.
Pat Quinn, I guarantee it's going to be future versus not Quinn again.
Well,
there will be less cerebral than what
you just
described.
You and I both know people who win campaigns are the ones who determine the agenda. Right. I would say clearly on the Democratic side, our preference would be to have that national debate, and I think the Republicans, Ms. Harold,
I was going to say Democrats
would prefer to have the past debate.
They're definitely going to make it about Trump. They're going to make it. I'm going to be your protector. I'm going to be the citizens of Illinois. I'll be your protector against this federal government that doesn't care about your rights. I mean, that's what they're going to put that all.
There is, and there's an interesting thing. Just not to get too far in the weeds of political strategy, but when you ask in a poll, Democrats, of course, do you want somebody who's going to stand up to Trump? Everyone says, of course. I think, and maybe I'm a lone voice, I think there's a real skepticism among voters. You say, what are you going to do? I mean, right. Even as Attorney General, it's powerful this, but particularly all these candidates running for Congress and running for state reps saying, I'm going to stand up to Donald Trump.
Well, Joe Berrios is too.
Well, but I think,
and he's running for assessor.
Because right, it tests well. Because it tests well.
He stood up
to
the NRA.
It tests well in a poll, right?
I know, but do you believe
but I think
me?
Voters are like, really? What's my assessor going to do against Donald Trump?
Yeah, when you see attack ads that are all about the NRA. And I mean,
no tax deals for you,
office,
big boy.
Right, right. Exactly.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein in studio. Erica Harold as well, who is running for Attorney General, the Republican from the primary coming up here on March 20th. All right, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back, get the news headlines, and then we'll continue our conversation here on the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning here in Chicago, 720 WGN, broadcasting live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on beautiful Michigan Avenue. It's brisk. It's brisk tonight. Today, it's going to get warmer, though, so never fear. Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett, Steve Grzanich, Sandberg, Jen DeSalvo, Joe Romano, everybody's here. 312-981-7200 if you want to get in the conversation. We're talking with Erica Harold. She is the running for Attorney General in the Republican primary coming up here on March 20th. We continue our conversation. Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein are here as well. You know, one thing I wanted to ask about was the role of Attorney General when it comes to budget stalemates. We've seen in the last couple of years with the legislature and the governor where the budget became... You know, you see that at the national level, there's a government shutdown if the budget doesn't get agreed upon. In the state of Illinois, there were we went to the courts to pay state employees and keep it going. And it took a lot of pressure off the deadlines to essentially come to an agreement. As Attorney General, what do you think the role is of that office when it comes to monitoring what's happening between the legislature and the governor?
Because of principles of separation of powers, I think the Attorney General should try to stay out of that to the extent possible, because oftentimes you are talking about very political issues that are happening, especially if you're talking about as a budget balanced. Both sides will have an argument as to whether the budget is balanced. But I think if you see appropriations that are occurring without any sort of authorization, then it is appropriate to step in. But if I think in the case when Lisa Madigan went to court, there was a court order that was out actually allowing those state workers to be paid.
Right.
So I would not have intervened to try to get the court to remove that order.
There seems the hope would be that other constitutional offices would essentially monitor or be able to force lawmakers to do their job. At a certain point, I think as members of...
It's too bad we can't just have a do your job bill that applies to everyone.
Right. Like a blanket bill.
Right.
Exactly. So I think that was a popular move for the Attorney General at the time to essentially try to force the different parties to come together to get this balance or to get a balanced budget.
Well, you can do things to have the court enter orders or not, but that doesn't actually make the parties come together. And in fact, it might actually make it more difficult for the parties to come together because you've inserted yourself into a process where you don't actually have a real judicial role. It's the role of the court to say if somebody is not doing their job or not. So there are certain circumstances where an attorney general could seek a declaratory judgment, go to court, and ask a court to enter something that requires people to do their job. But ultimately, enforcing compliance does come with the court.
The attorney general's office has always been a consumer protection office as well for scams and safe toys,
yes,
and things of the like. But where do you see the role going with regard to public safety when it comes to crimes involving guns and loopholes and filling those?
I think that the consent decree will be an area where the Attorney General has the ability to make sure that certain issues of community policing are addressed, to make sure that there are good metrics and benchmarks. I think restoring trust between community and law enforcement is something that's very important. And that's why I think proceeding with the consent decree is something that's important. I think everyone that's running for Attorney General agrees that consent decree needs to be pursued.
It's, I mean, that's such an interesting area because because the consent decree that was really brought down by the Department of Justice under the Obama administration has largely the Department of Justice under Jeff Sessions has said, we're not interested in doing a consent decree. The mayor of Chicago, in a way, has said, I'm not really interested in doing a consent decree. The police department doesn't want to do a consent decree. So what role does the attorney general have if all parties interested aren't interested?
I think that the mayor and I think that the city and law enforcement is interested in reform, and people with whom I've spoken seem to want that consent decree to go forward because it was a way forward for the stakeholders to have the kind of proper negotiations and to address a lot of critical issues. Because regardless of the fact that the Trump administration stepped away from that consent decree, there still was the Justice Department report that outlined a lot of issues that have to be addressed. And I think it would be a real mistake after everyone came to the table to say, okay, just kidding, because there are real issues of violence that need to be addressed. And this provided a great moment for people to have the proper conversations and the right metrics and benchmarks to address it.
The Chicago police FOP, they don't want the consent decree. The police officers on the street. I mean, I understand the concept of trying to find reforms. And the real issue here is that the police department and the city of Chicago said, we can handle our own reforms. We don't need the Justice Department from the federal government coming down and setting the terms of what that's going to be. So at a point, I mean, as someone who would be in the middle of that argument where maybe they all agree on reform, they just don't want to deal with the federal government getting in their business. Does it make your job tougher in the sense that you're representing the state of Illinois and the citizens of Illinois, but at the same time, those organizations that we just spoke of aren't interested?
Well, when Lisa Madigan filed the lawsuit, she announced the lawsuit at a press conference with Mayor Emanuel. And so I do believe there's reason to think that all the parties are at least committed to moving forward. And having someone who's an independent monitor who makes sure that proper progress is being made, I think that's important. And so obviously you need people to cooperate. But I have reason to believe that there's enough cooperation on both sides that it is productive and worth moving forward.
Erica Harold is in studio today here in 720 WGN, the Cochran Show. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. We're talking about her candidacy for attorney general on the Republican side, the primary coming up here. The one other issue as well, as Andre just mentioned, it is an Office of Consumer Protection. Usually that will play out in press releases about scams and phishing scams, sure. Emails, things like that. Right. But there's a lot at stake when it comes to deregulating our area, big business, big corporations who have, you know, we'll try to put profit over people. How do you see the role of attorney general when it comes to regulating or at least being a representative of the people of Illinois when it comes to corporate interests?
I think consumer protection is a key role for the next attorney general. It is an area where Lisa Madigan did a good job. I think some people think it was to the exclusion of other things, but regardless, I think she was a fierce advocate for consumer interests and does deserve credit for doing that. I think as it relates to issues going forward, identity theft, issues like that are important, making sure that you can use both your authority under state and federal law to pursue issues if there's been statutory violations. But it's also a bully pulpit issue where you have the ability to highlight different scams that people should be aware of and then give them access to resources to address things like identity theft.
I've heard so many people say, including, you know, our newsroom, that this is going to be an election, especially this year, with more women voters, more independent voters, more millennial voters. And I've heard this term so often, I'm sure you have too, Justin, in the past few weeks, fiscally conservative and socially liberal. So as a Republican, can you be socially liberal as attorney general?
I don't think that you should have any of those labels as attorney general. Your job is to enforce the law. It is an office where you take Illinois state law and recognize that it's your job to defend the constitutionality of it if it's challenged. But you're not supposed to be bringing to that office these sorts of labels because you are representing all of the people and you are representing the laws of our state.
All right, our last question is, as we wrap up here, and I just moderated a debate for the Democratic candidates, and at the end I was able to ask them some quick lightning round questions, right? So I feel like it's only fair to ask Erica the same question, but it's very simple. 85 bears or 96 bulls?
85 bears.
Oh,
there you go.
I had a godfather who played on the Bears, Revisori. I don't believe he was on that team, but Revisori is my godfather. And so I always have to go with the Bears.
There you go. Erica Harold is running for...
You didn't ask for Cubs or Sox.
I didn't. No. That's too easy.
Don't do that.
Erica Harold running in the Republican primary for Attorney General for the state of Illinois. Ms. Harold, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll continue with Pat and Eric coming up here. We'll talk a little bit more about what's coming up with the primary.
To the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein in studio. Let's talk politics. So who does Erica Harold want to run against in the Democrat side? Because right now I guess you would say it's a two-man race for the primary, but there's a lot of great candidates on the Democrat side.
There's a lot of candidates, and full disclosure, we're working for Kwame Raoul. I do think it's turned into a two-person race between Kwame and Pat Quinn. The other ones are sort of struggling to get oxygen. Mm-hmm. You know, I think in that debate about the past versus the future, Kwame has more of that young energy, more hopeful, kind of a newer face on the scene statewide. Obviously, he's been in the legislature. If I'm Erica Harold, I think Pat Quinn is a candidate I want to run against. I think if I'm Bruce Rauner, I want to see a ticket that's got Pat Quinn on it, because it just reminds you of the past and Blagojevich and all that stuff. And I'm hopeful that Kwame comes out of this. But look, she's an impressive candidate, and I think we just heard that she's going to put up a good campaign, a good fight. I think it's going to be, again, it's not the marquee matchup because you have the governor's race, but I think it's going to be a very high profile race. And you also could have two African American, two people of color running for Attorney General, which would be unprecedented too.
For Republicans, if she wins the nomination, I think it's our first ever elected statewide. Alan Keyes was appointed African American.
Okay, so you salivate at the idea as a Republican for Pat Quinn? I mean, I feel that at the same time, you could say there's a lot of name recognition for the former governor downstate and other places it may be a backfire kind of thing where you're like, do you want someone with experience or do you want someone who doesn't?
I think in the Democratic primary, that name ID in an 8 or 7 person race helps him more than it's going against someone as impressive as Erica Harold. And I think for me, the perfect matchup is the future versus the past. And there's a lot of commercials that can be made on things that Pat Quinn has done in his career that a lot of the voters, that's why he didn't win last time.
Right. But here's the bottom line. If Pat ends up out of this primary, I'm a Democrat, I'll support him. But I think here's the problem. Just, again, being an objective observer, there's a sense the state's going the wrong way. There's a sense of a strong feeling of wanting change. And I think it's going to be hard for Pat Quinn to suggest change agent.
Right.
You know, you kind of led the way to Rauner. I think people are looking to turn the page on both these guys, and I'm not sure how that plays for him.
Is that one of your guys' commercials?
No, but it might be soon. Should I write that up?
No, someone just did
Can
that.
Can I write that
someone
up?
Someone did that?
Oh, yeah. No. Well, there's a Raoul commercial that says,
that's a good one. For
Democrats, a lot of Democrats say if it weren't for Quinn, we wouldn't have had Rauner, that he kind of bungled, not just the campaign, but a lot of stuff that went on in his administration became fodder for the Rauner campaign. And Democrats who are, who really despise Governor Rauner say Quinn was responsible for it.
But a lot of Democrats, even though this guy has a lot of name ID and a lot of sentiment for him, I think a lot of establishment Democrats, going back to the cutback amendment, aren't that thrilled with Pat Quinn because he's always been kind of the outsider.
Yeah, that's true. So it cuts a couple different ways. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Money talks, but this could, we are on pace, if we haven't already, to be the most expensive gubernatorial race in state history, with Pritzker dumping $7 million more into the campaign last week, and Rauner, of course, refunding his, and now pledging, saying he's going to give $10 million to Eric Harris. I mean,
Pritzker Andres now spent more than Donald Trump spent to become president of the United States.
How about that?
Think about that for a second.
Was he 31%?
You would also say on the Republican side, Rauner spent a lot of money to only be up 20 points on a fringe candidate.
He hasn't spent that much money. He didn't spend his entire campaign what JB spent just in the primary. Right. So he hasn't spent much money at all.
Is Pritzker the front runner because he has spent so much money? And could that work against him? Could voters see that and say, hey, I don't want someone who's going to dump millions and millions into his campaign?
I think there becomes a backlash at a certain point.
Didn't Biss have a JB meter up?
Yeah, he's got a JB meter. Look, there have been several public and private polls, and polls bounce around, particularly on primaries. What I will say is that they're all showing three things. And again, disclosure, we're working for Kennedy. Everybody knows that. But objectively, the polls have shown Biss has dropped. Pritzker's flattened out, can't get above a certain number, and Kennedy's moved up. Right. So I think we're headed for a really interesting primary night, and I don't think anybody can predict what's going
to
happen.
We're down to 10 days or so. Yeah. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein in studio, as they are every week here on the Steve Cochran Show. Guys, thanks for joining us, and yeah, it's going to be a nice little roller coaster ride towards the end.
Well, it is Steve Cochran's birthday week coming up, and I'm not going to be here next week, so I just want to make sure that everybody knows he's 2 weeks older than me.
32 or 33?
Oh, no, we're big numbers.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey.
8:11 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. A lot coming up, including Brent Seabrook, breakfast for the Blackhawk. Also, Kendall Coyne from the United States women's hockey team that won gold. She'll join us in the 9 o'clock hour. How great is that?
Woo!
So great. On the line with us, of course, Dean Richards, who will... I love this time of year, because we were talking about the Fight for Air Climb coming up. You're going to be doing the show live from the American Lung Association Climb 9 to 11, as you do every year.
Presidential Towers.
At Presidential Towers.
Now, I know that you've been there the last couple of years. I can't remember...
what my time was?
No, how sweaty you are when you're done.
Yeah.
Because everybody comes to where I'm doing the broadcast when they're finished, you know, and, you know, they chat and have, you know, rehydrate,
right,
have a snack, everything. It's the most delightful smelling room, having like 20 WGN staffers sweating like Albert Brooks in
how
broadcast
about this?
News.
And
how about
this? And they all want to give you a hug, Dean.
Right.
You know what I'll do, Dean, just for you? Is I'll do an hour so you can do the stair climb. You know, I know that you want to do your show and it's important to you, but I know how important climbing stairs are to you as well.
Well, very true, and it's a very good cause, and that is why I make the sacrifice and sit in a chair for 2 hours and do absolutely nothing, because it would be too gratifying to you know, to be out in the stairs. It's a
want to show off.
It's a true sacrifice, for me to, you know, just sit there when I want to show off my athletic prowess like that.
Yeah. It's very selfless of Dean to take on that kind of responsibility.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to spread the word that nobody from the staff should come by Dean's show after we get done climbing.
Have I not made that pretty clear?
I think you've made it very clear, Dean.
All right, let's get to some...
who doesn't enjoy sweaty coworkers?
Who doesn't enjoy it? All right, some entertainment news. This is an interesting story. Terry Crews, the actor from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and other films, had an assault case that he was really that was getting a lot of headlines with the sexual harassment movement in Hollywood. News on that story, it was rejected. What's the story here?
Statute of limitations apparently ran out on this, so the LA District Attorney's Office said that they are going to not file criminal charges against his one-time agent named Adam Bennett, who is Terry Crews accused of groping him at a Hollywood party two years ago. The agency is the one that's headed by Mayor Emanuel's brother, Ari Emanuel, Super Agent Ari Emanuel. But Terry Crews was, I think, the only guy to come forward. Well, that's not true, because there were some Kevin Spacey allegations that came out that also were from men regarding Kevin Spacey. But this one was one of the very few where a guy came forward and said that he was also assaulted. And at least there will not be criminal charges on this. There still is a civil lawsuit that's pending on this, so we'll see, you know, what happens with all of that.
Terry Crews, very admirable to come out, because, you know, reading the story of that when the alleged incident happened, and Terry Crews was angry and he wanted to have an altercation about it, and then he mentioned this in interviews and on Twitter as well, that as a black man in Hollywood, if he assaults, he's going to be the one that gets in trouble, and he really had some to say. So it's interesting to see how this plays out. And that it gets rejected.
It brings up an interesting concept that if something like that happens, what's the appropriate response? Do you just, you know, back away and either do nothing or bring it up later, like Terry Crews has done both. I mean, this happened quite a long time ago, and he only brought it up once women started coming forward with their allegations against Harvey Weinstein. Do you get into a physical altercation to stop something right. like that? Does that right, regardless of the fact of whether he's a black man or not? And I totally understand what he's saying, but.
What's the protocol? Right?
Is a physical altercation the appropriate way to do it, or you just step back and, you know, you take the higher ground and report it later on?
Obviously,
if this happened in 2016, though, doesn't that seem odd that statute of limitations?
Yeah, I was gonna.
Would,
I mean, but
would
I guess,
already run out. I thought guess that was normally 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules are, but I mean, I think about a lot of the accusations that have come out of or the allegations of sexual misconduct. A lot of them aren't criminal cases, right? They're going to be just played out in the media or possibly in civil trial.
Yeah. Don't know. Don't know.
Inclusion riders was a big thing. Francis McDormand's speech at the Oscars. Michael B. Jordan, who's the big star of Black Panther and also the film Creed, has said that he is going to use inclusion riders. For those who missed this story, what is an inclusion rider?
Inclusion rider is if you're... I guess if you're anybody, you can insist in an employment contract that you want certain things to happen, that you want red M&Ms in your dressing room, that, you know, you want, in this case, an inclusion rider would include that you want a certain number of women to be working as crew or stars, a certain percentage of diversity of other actors and co-workers and crew and so forth. That's what it's about. So when Frances McDormand won her Academy Award on Sunday, as part of her speech, when she wasn't acting nutty, said that she encouraged all the A-listers to include these riders in their next contracts
right.
because they're the A-listers.
And they have the power, right?
They have the most power to say, you know, if a Meryl Streep says, yeah, I'll work in your movie and I want this much money and I want, you know, this temperature water in my dressing room and I also want to make sure that there's, you know, 50% female crew, a certain percentage of people of color, blah, blah, blah. Meryl Streep can get that done. They'll easily do that for a Meryl Streep. Yeah. So anyway, Michael B. Jordan is not only an A-list actor, he's also got his own production company that's called Outlier Society. He said that from now on, all the deals that he does in his production company will include these inclusion riders, saying that he's been privileged to work with women and people of color throughout his career, and he wants his company to continue creating opportunities for people who otherwise might not have that opportunity.
And you're going to see more and more of that, I'm sure.
I think it's great.
Yeah, Dean Richards, of course, joins us every day here on The Cochran Show.
You'll be calling his name, oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor.
Dean Richards on the line, of course, the man who can be seen every morning on the best morning news show in Chicago, the WGN Morning News, and, of course, here on the Steve Cochran Show, the 8 o'clock hour. All right, Dean, let's keep this up. Oprah sells her Weight Watchers stock. What is this about?
Well, I remember she became the TV spokesperson for Weight Watchers, and, you know, business went crazy. You know, anytime Oprah... you know, says, you know, essentially endorses anything, it goes through the roof. And that's what happened with Weight Watchers stock. You know, she bought stock when she became the spokesperson a couple of years ago at like $7 a share. And yesterday she sold a bunch of it, quite a bit of it, for 8 or 9 times that
wow.
price. We are told.
Well, good for her. She needs the money. She
yeah.
These are tough times.
Tough times.
In Oprah.
Wrinkle in time. We
Oprah
don't know what's going to happen, right?
She says she was merely trying to balance her investment portfolio right. and is not signaling anything about the company. She says she's still very deeply committed to them. In fact, a portion of the profit that she made, she donated to charity, as Oprah is wont to do from time to time.
In those stories, I always love when there's investment stories around celebrities, because we think that the mental picture of them on their E-Trade, you know, going in and switching things around. I'm sure she didn't even know that was happening, and her investment people are like, yes, we've got a big score. And
her and Gail sitting in front of a computer.
Yeah, right.
having a Weight Watcher shake.
She's like,
with all the money spread out on the bed, the floor, all over.
Lighting cigars with $100 bills.
Yeah. See, that's the mental picture we have, Oprah and Gail. Right. All right.
Yesterday morning, when I was filling in, we played the clip of Oprah on Stephen Colbert, you know, and he has that recurring God character that's projected on the ceiling of his theater. And they had the God character the other night wearing an Oprah 2020 hat and signs telling her that she should run for president. She still declined.
She declined.
Right. Still declined.
Today is International Women's Day. There are discounted tickets to celebrate this the anniversary or the day that is set aside for international women or celebrating women around the world. What can people find when it comes to discounted tickets in the area?
Yeah, I don't completely understand the connection to International Women's Day with this, but hey, a discount ticket is a discount ticket. That's the way that I look at it. And Broadway in Chicago, they're titling this Women Take Center Stage. Get it? Because today is International Women's Day. So today you can choose from some of the Broadway in Chicago shows for only $38 a ticket, which is a pretty good deal because those shows go for way, way more than that.
Do you have to go today? Is that the idea that you'd have to go to?
No. You just have to purchase the ticket today because some of the shows haven't even opened yet.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like Pretty Woman, the musical that we talked about also yesterday morning with its director, Jerry Mitchell, and an unknown musician named Brian Adams. who is in with us. So
the prompt team behind Pretty Woman.
Right. Our tickets for that are $38. The Gloria Estefan musical, which will be opening soon in Chicago, returning to Chicago, $38. But some of the shows that they have coming up later in the year, including Sound of Music, Cinderella, Dirty Dancing, Color Purple, Waitress.
That's a lot of stuff coming.
It was a lot of shows. Yeah, and $38 a ticket. You can go to BroadwayInChicago.com and use the code WOMEN on there, and the discount should apply.
And as you mentioned yesterday here on the show, you broke it on the show, the dates for Dear Evan Hansen have been announced for Chicago.
Yeah, this is a huge big deal for theater in Chicago. That this six-time Tony Award-winning show is finally coming to Chicago. It's going to be February 12th through March the 10th of next year, 2019, at the Cadillac Palace Theater. Tickets will go on sale March 28th for this, not only for this show, but for some of the other upcoming Broadway and Chicago shows, which also includes the world premiere of Tootsie the Musical, based on the movie Tootsie. They've got Hello Dolly this season. They've got some other classic shows. You can see it all at Broadway in Chicago.
Is that Tootsie musical, is that a tryout here in Chicago to go to Broadway?
Is that what they're doing?
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a pre-Broadway run. I mean, whether it's successful here or not, it's definitely going to go to Broadway. But, you know, they often bring these shows, like Mel Brooks did with the producers and so many other shows that have started here in Chicago before they went to Broadway. They come here, they, you know, work the bugs out a little bit, change things a little bit, and then before it goes to Broadway. Because they trust Chicago audiences. They love Chicago audiences, and they feel like they get some great feedback from Chicago audiences. So that's how that process works. Mm-hmm. But Dear Evan Hansen, we don't know who's going to be in the show yet. People have been asking me since we mentioned this yesterday morning. It is not going to be Ben Platt, who originated the role of Evan Hansen on Broadway. He's not even on the show on Broadway anymore. He was in it for about a year. So it will be something else. Unfortunately, will not be him.
And that's usually the case, right?
When absolutely.
Shows come through,
yeah, absolutely.
Dean Richards, of course, joins us every morning to dish on everything that's happening in the entertainment world.
Yeah, I'm sorry I have nothing salacious today.
No, it's pretty salacious. I mean, I guess,
Dean.
Yeah, you're right. I just went down a list. I guess the money, the burning the money cigar, Oprah Winfrey stock, that's
right. And we made that up.
We made that up.
That part wasn't even true.
Dean, wait, I have one. When are you going to review the Oprah movie?
Oh, the...
Right.
Because, there's got to be a light at the end of this tunnel.
Because I hinted to Andrea yesterday that it's not going to be a great review. Mm-hmm. And Andrea, more, just about more than anybody, loves my bad reviews.
I do.
Way more than my, my good ones. I'm going to review it. Well, I'm going to review it a little bit on, with Bill and Wendy today, although Wendy, I hear, is not going to be there. I'll review that. It's going to be about 11:30 today. But then tomorrow, full guns a-blazing. On Oprah, Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, Zach Galifianakis, this movie called A Wrinkle in Time. There's a scary movie, a horror movie called Strangers.
Yeah.
Pray at Night, P-R-E-Y, get it? Pray at Night. There's the, like actually four or five movies opening this weekend. So
well, I'm just gonna go see Black Panther. So
have you not seen Black Panther?
I haven't. I'm going this weekend for the first time. I know.
What
I know.
Up?
God,
I know.
Justin.
Because you know, then I get into it.
And you have a young son. You should have been there first weekend.
He was not happy with my choice to avoid the lines and the crowd. We tried to go.
Did you make
out.
Him go see some indie film? Some like Pakistani foreign language film.
Yeah, he and I went
film.
And saw Call Me by Your Name. It was awkward.
Nice.
It was
good. No, that's nice. That's nice. That's why Justin's getting Father of the Year award
right,
this year.
Right. Dean Richards, great to talk to you, buddy. Thanks
you,
for
buddy.
Joining us.
Erickson then mishandled the puck, but pushes it to center ice. Oh, and a big hit by Bowen on Nyquist from the penalty boxes. Seabrook goes to the red wing line, and he scores! Hawks win! Hawks win! The Blackhawks have dispatched the Detroit Red Wings on a Seabrook overtime goal! Serve up the calamari!
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Steve Cochran Show here. Justin Kaufman in for Steve. Andre and Dave are here as well on the line with us for Breakfast with the Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank, is Brent Seabrook. How great to have Mr. Seabrook on the program. Not just a hockey defenseman for the Blackhawks, but also a fashion designer. And also going to be bringing his Brent Seabrook Celebrity Ice Bowl on Monday, March 12th to the Lucky Strike Chicago, celebrating its 10th year that Seabrook has been involved. ICE, of course, the Inner City Education Fund. Brent Seabrook, welcome to Breakfast with a Blackhawk. Thanks for joining us.
Morning. Morning, guys. How are you?
Good, good. So tell about the talk. I mean, this is the 10th year you've been involved with the Celebrity Ice Bowl. So talk about it. What does it mean for you to be involved with this? And also, what can people expect if they choose to attend?
What to expect? I think, you know, the boys will be all out there being competitive and trying to be the best bowler out there. It's usually lots of fun the next day in the locker room and everybody chirping each other about it. So that's what to expect with the bowling if people are coming out. But, you know, what it means to me, I think I've been there, you know, with Brad and the Ice Foundation for 10 years now. And what Brad's done with that program is just been remarkable, I think. You know, being there for the first couple of years and helping out and supporting, you know, it was amazing. It was a great feeling, but it was a couple of years back when I had a kid come up to me that was the first recipient of the scholarship and talking with him and now he's back helping out the program and helping out with Brad you know, being there and you know, just listening to his story and how much it helped him. It was pretty special to hear that and sit down and talk with him.
That's great. Well, tickets still available at innercityeducation.org for the Ice Bowl, which is coming up on March 12th, Monday, March 12th at Lucky Strike Chicago. Another you are not just a hockey player, you are an entrepreneur. Brent Seabrook is stepping into the fashion game. Talk about your 2018 Brent Seabrook New Era collection of hats. This is great. I mean, this is what you get in. This is why you play the game, right, Brent?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, it's, I don't know if I'm a fashion designer or anything like that. I'll stick to hockey, but it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun. I've always liked hats, and my wife could tell you how many hats I have at the house. She's not too happy with all them sitting around everywhere, but it's been fun working with New Era. They got a great team over there, and the guys I've worked with have been awesome. They they really make it easy, and I'm just sort of picking colors and throwing ideas out there, and all the people with New Era, they seem to know what works with what. You know, the first couple times I did it, it was I leaned on them quite a bit, and the last couple years I've tried to go off the cusp and design some different things, and it's got some good receptions. So.
And these are on sale now at the United Center at the Madhouse Team Store, so you can pick one up, check them out. Do we call them the Brent Seabrook Collection? I mean, that has a nice ring to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what they call it. There's a tag on the inside of the hat that say that. So
there you go.
I guess that's what we marked that mess.
What did you see, Brent, that you liked in the win over Colorado the other night, aside, obviously, from the outcome?
I don't know. I think we didn't give up. I think, you know, in games that have passed, I think, you know, when something like a goal is disallowed,
mm-hmm.
You know, it could shake us a little bit. But, you know, having that goal disallowed, that would have allowed us to go up 2-0. You know, I don't think the boys really wavered at all. I think, obviously, they got a great power play. They scored a goal to tie it up. And you know, as a team, we played well and played to keep it a 1-1 hockey game into the third period and going into overtime and obviously you know, a great play by Duncan, Patrick and Taser to get that goal 9 seconds in and not even give them a chance to counter, but it was it's always nice to win. You know, losing is tough and we've been doing too much losing lately, and it's tough on all of us. But it was nice to get a big win and feel good.
Well, tonight you've got Carolina coming in, and that means a bunch of your old teammates will be here, and Darles and Tavo, and you got Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Joakim Nordstrom. You've been through this many times now with going up against guys that you played with. Not too many times where you've played a team which has this many of your former teammates together, but is it something that has kind of become old hat? Do you have much interaction with these guys when they're there at the United Center tonight?
For sure. If we see them, we'll chit-chat and catch up a little bit. You know, but it's hockey and you know, we understand the business side of it, but you know, it's tough when you're playing your buddies, guys you've won with and guys you've got great relationships with and things like that. So you know, anytime you lose somebody, it's obviously tough and when you get the opportunity to play against them, you want to play well and sure they want to play well and try and beat us at the United Center, so it's going to be a fun game and looking forward to seeing those guys for sure.
You know, there was a survey that just came out from players and people in the NHL talking about the Chicago Blackhawks being the United Center being the place that everybody loves in terms of the fans, the Blackhawks fans. You've played your entire career in Chicago. Is that when you know a lot of players in the league? Is that true? Do players come here? Do they think about Chicago in that way? Do they think about is it a good thing or a bad thing that they have to play in Chicago with the fans we have here?
I think it's a little bit of both. Maybe I think they obviously enjoy coming to the United Center. I think we got a great group of fans that, you know, loud and wild and exciting to play in front of. You know, I think the bad side of it is for opposing players to come in. I mean, it is loud and it's raucous in there. And when the Hawks are playing well and scoring goals, it's probably a tough feeling to come in and play in. But I think the atmosphere is the atmosphere. You know, it's just a lot of fun to play in. Yeah.
Well, today's question for Breakfast for the Blackhawk, which is brought to you by MB Financial Bank, is from Linda from Illinois, who asks, is it my imagination or does our goal horn sound awesome and every other one in the NHL is irritating? So, do you notice that, Brent?
Yes. Yes, I agree with her fully. It's always, but I mean, that, talking to buddies and stuff like that, they say our goal horn is annoying as well. So, I mean, I love it. I love it. You know, when you go to other buildings, it's definitely sucks.
Well, Brent Seabrook, thanks so much for joining us today at Breakfast with a Blackhawk. Good luck tonight and the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, that Celebrity Ice Bowl is scheduled for Monday, March 12th at Lucky Strike Chicago. You can get the tickets at innercityeducation.org. Congratulations, Linda. You win an autographed Chicago Blackhawks hockey puck courtesy of MB Financial Bank. MB means business. Go to WGNradio.com/contest to submit your question for a chance to win.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran here in the Cochran Show. Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett, Jen DeSalvo, Steve Grzanich, Sandberg, Joe Romano. Who else? What, I can name everybody. I can name everybody and just get the list at WGN Radio and we can just go down the list. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. This is so fun. Kendall Coyne,
yes,
the gold medalist from the U.S. women's hockey team, who is a local product, of course.
South Suburban native.
South Suburban native will be with us a little bit later in the 9 o'clock hour as we transition to CLTV as well. How fun is that? I mean, and they're on a whirlwind. I was just reading her Twitter that they were in New York and now she's back. They escaped the nor'easter, so she's back in town, but she's back home for the first time since the gold medal. What a tremendous story.
Oh my God, it's a fantastic story. It really is.
Yeah, right? And kudos to Sandberg to get her to come on.
Oh, yeah. Sandberg got her the day after they won the gold medal.
Really?
She was on with us. Yeah. Wasn't it the day after? Yeah.
Yeah.
2 days after? I think it was the next day.
Yeah, with the date.
Well, their time.
With the date change
and
the time change, it was actually like a week earlier.
I had a little help from the Blackhawks, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
It was all you. Like Allison Janney says, it was all you.
Oh, yeah. All me and Adam Roglin.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff. Also, we're going to talk about the book Sign of Resistance, A Visual History of Protest in America. Author Bonnie Siegler is here. This is a great book about really charting the history of protest in our country through the great signs and designs. I mean, really, with the Women's March, which we seen a lot of that becoming viral has to do with the great signs that were put together and of course broadcast through social media and other places.
Remember as a kid you'd go to a ball game and you'd make a sign then the Blackhawks kind of brought that back where, you know, when you walk in there were Sharpies for Patrick Sharp and you can kind of make your own sign. But the Women's March, the first year we had it, it was cool. The second year is where you really notice people put time and work into these signs, which
what's really great about Bonnie's book, and we'll talk to her right after the 9 o'clock news, is you get the sense you understand more about this country's relationship to protest and design, really. But you look at the early days, even, you know, the Declaration of Independence and some of the early stuff. I mean, they're protest signs. They are exactly very similar to what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Protest is in our country's blood, mm-hmm. and it shows itself at the beginning of this country, and it's talked about a lot in the book, Signs of Resistance. So we'll have that coming up in the 9 o'clock hour as well. So lots to do. I'm excited. One more hour here.
One more hour, Justin.
I know, and I'm glad that
you can go and crash.
Right. If you're just listening, I host The Download, of course, 7 to 11. And just the way it worked out, I did the show last night.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't get home till 12 after midnight. And there was a part of me, it's like, because Patty does it once in a while. I was like, man, I just crash on the couch.
Did you?
And then come back. No, I made it.
You went home?
To bed. But I'm not used to this. I was talking to Sandberg about it. I'm not used to getting up and not disturbing the family.
Oh,
to
and being
leave
quiet.
The house.
Yeah. That's
so I was a rookie mistake I made with not having my clothes set out night before. So there was a lot of stumbling and bumbling around the bedroom, mm-hmm. tripping on things, and waking
dropping
up.
The
waking
phone.
Exactly.
What light do I put
did
on?
Did not do a good job this morning.
You know what? Don't feel bad about it. After so many years of doing this, it's like you're getting up to go to work.
Right. That's
so
true.
That they get to sleep.
They get to sleep.
So they'll fall back to sleep. If you wake them up, they'll fall back to sleep.
You think someone's had this discussion, yeah, Justin? Right.
But I just I feel like when I host on Monday, I did that. I set everything out like I was very strategic.
Uh-huh.
Where the socks were, where the jeans were. Everything was all set in certain ways for me to essentially just move through the morning and get here on time.
Right.
Last night, not so much. This morning, not so much. It was a bumble fest at the house this morning, but I feel like I've adjusted now. So if I'm wearing two different colored socks,
yes. It happens all the time.
By the way,
with two different shoes one morning.
He did. By the way, David, we're going to tell you have to do Bill and Wendy now, Sports Central, and John Williams.
All right, good. Let's do it. I'm here. Right. I'm caffeinated. Let's do it. All right, we'll take a break, and then we will come back, get the news, and we will start the 9 o'clock hour on CLTV. Stay with us.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
There you go. Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran this morning. Andre Darlis, Dave Ennett as well here. 312-981-7200. We welcome in our audience on CLTV as well here at 720 WG. And the new book, Signs of Resistance, A Visual History of Protest in America, does an amazing job of chronicling our history with protest, but also the design, the signs, everything that goes into what makes protest movements thrive. Bonnie Siegler is a designer and the author of the book, and she is in studio now. Bonnie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm interested because tonight you're going to be, you got a big event with Women and Children First at the Morningstar Theater Space, 22 West Washington Street, starts at 6:30. What will be part of the presentation? Is it really showing slides and talking about the history of the protest movement in this country?
Yeah, I go through a few of the chapters, show images, and tell the stories behind them. Every image in the book has an amazing story behind it. So it's fun and sad and...
All that'd be there. Well, we saw with the Women's March that a lot of the viral sensation, every you open up Instagram or Twitter, Facebook, you see the creative, clever slogans and signs that were produced by women and others who are marching in all the cities around the country, around the world. But really, when you think about the design of protests, it goes all the way back. It's right at the beginning of the book, you talk about some of the stuff that was being produced by our forefathers in the 18th century, mm-hmm. that would be considered protest signs in this day and age.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the oldest image in the book is something Benjamin Franklin did, which is familiar to a lot of people today. It's a drawing of a snake cut up into 8 pieces, each piece representing a different colony. I know there were 13, but for some reason he combined some states, and it just says join or die. And that was 1754, and it's still an image that people recognize today, which is crazy.
That's crazy. I mean, one of the great things about the book is that, you know, you can go through the history of America, and you can see in different chapters of our history where design and where the protest signs live, because you will have that, which is amazing. But then you can talk about World War One, you took Vietnam, of course, the 60s and the Civil Rights Movement, all
suffrage.
The 80s and 90s and 2000s, when you talk about the protest movements of around the war in Iraq and other places, but then also with the Women's March. It's amazing to see everything that's come out of it.
Yeah. I think the signs, too, like we were alluding to a little bit earlier, too, the signs have kind of taken on a life of their own. With no, you don't even need words anymore as far as when describing them. The signs speak for themselves.
It's true. It's absolutely true. What was also interesting at the Women's March, as opposed to some past marches through history, was everybody had, there were so many issues at stake. And so women chose the thing, people chose the thing that they were most upset about. And so the march taken as a whole represented so many different issues. Immigration, women's rights, equality. You know, everybody touched on their own thing. And so it was a real melting pot of protest.
You know, for you as a designer, when putting this together, I mean, what, when you talk about the evolution of the protest sign, do you see that in from generation to generation, that at one point, like you mentioned with Benjamin Franklin, it was just join or die, and then even some of the really serious stuff when it comes around suffrage and the civil rights movement, have you seen an evolution of what signs work and what signs don't, or what designs work?
What's crazy is that Benjamin Franklin one really really started with a formula. He just knew it intuitively, where a very simple, memorable image and very few words was the most powerful thing. In some of the suffrage signs, they told their whole story on a sign.
It's amazing to see those signs. There's a lot of words.
Yeah.
And so the really memorable ones from every protest were the simplest, cleanest, and the ones that you kept picturing in your mind. They had the most impact for 260 years.
You saw with the Vietnam protests in the late 60s a change in protest signs where there were an imagery, and it wasn't just protest signs, just the design that was coming from the protest movement, whether it was gory photos of what was happening in Vietnam, or you may have actually started to see more comedy coming out of it, or clever statements that were getting picked up by the papers at different protests. Is that really where you saw more of the modern protest, a lot of what we see today, the genesis of that?
Yeah, definitely. Artists and designers really stepped up during the Vietnam War more than in the past. So they brought their craft and their skill to the protest signs. But also, it was a life or death situation for the protesters. So using images that had a certain amount of shock value, they just needed to do whatever they could. So whether it be victims of war in Vietnam or the coffins of soldiers coming home, they did things nobody had done before because they were trying to wake America up and shake them.
Bonnie Siegler is my guest. She is the author of Signs of Resistance, A Visual History Protest in America. Bonnie is going to be on stage at the AIGA Chicago event with Women and Children First at the Morning Star Theater Space at 22 West Washington Street, starting at 6:30 tonight. Bonnie, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Bonnie Siegler is in studio with us. She's a designer and also the author of Signs of Resistance, A Visual History of Protest in America. She's got a presentation coming up tonight at the Morning Star Theater Space, 22 West Chicago or West Washington Street in downtown Chicago, right next to CBS there on Washington and State. You know, thinking of the modern protest movement, we kind of were talking a little bit before about when it, in the 60s, how it became much more media friendly, in the sense that it was shocking and there were a lot of imagery that we had never seen before, and it was capturing media attention. Modern protest movements may not necessarily, obviously we saw with the Women's March a lot of signs, but it's moved in a different area. I think of the Black Lives Matter movement, where a lot of it was performance art. Just in the way that you're seeing staged photography opportunities with the protester in front of riot police, or tape over the mouth. It has changed not just a handwritten sign, but protesters have gotten savvy to the idea of media images.
Yes. Yeah. Black Lives Matter has done an incredible job with they staged die-ins and I Can't Breathe, which were Eric Garner's last words. They're incredibly powerful to see crowds of people doing this together, which actually the I Am a Man from Memphis during the sanitation march was very similar. You saw hundreds and hundreds of people with the same sign, and that was really powerful in a similar way.
From a design standpoint, when you see this as someone who has dedicated your life to that profession, are you what stands out? Is it the message of what being protested, or is it the way that it interacts with not just the background or the more aesthetics of good design?
The aesthetics of good design do matter to me, and that is partially what I use to curate the book. But I also love, when somebody is incredibly passionate about something and is able to put those raw emotions on their sign, the non-professional sign makers can really rock your world and make you think about something in a new way, because they're not making all the right aesthetic decisions necessarily, but the power is there.
I think it's such a better way to go now, too. And aside from, snarling traffic and blocking stores so you can't get in, I think it's a much more peaceful and powerful message if you just put it on a sign, follow the directions, march peacefully, walk peacefully. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just, that a picture says 1,000 words, literally, mm-hmm. in this case.
You know, I I wonder too, as we get past even the modern, we talked about the modern movement and the Women's March, but also Black Lives Matter. I think about the president, and Donald Trump has evoked a lot of performance art and contemporary art. I think right here we have the Trump Tower in Chicago, where people are showing their, posting Instagram their feelings about this building being in the background, but they're creating images for social media about their disdain for the president, or the art exhibit that of the golden pigs that
the
was in front.
Pigs,
yeah, the flying pigs,
right,
in
yeah.
front. But there's, and even we've seen the naked Trump, we've seen other, I mean, there seems to be a rallying cry around creating pieces of art, not necessarily design signs, but pieces of art that are in protest of the current administration.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's also a different forms of protest. There's this organization, Bell Visuals, projected on the Trump International Hotel in D.C., pay Trump bribes here, with an arrow pointing to the doorway, or emoluments welcome. And then more recently, they projected S-hole in response to what
right,
he said.
Right.
Which is just amazing. So, and they can't take it down because it's just a projection. So it's really ingenious.
Right. I love it. And I also think that it's interesting because, as stated in your book, this is really a huge part of American culture and history. This is not something that just because this president is in office, we have seen in different forms and different political parties. Protest and protest design being a huge part of American culture.
Absolutely. I mean, for women to get the vote, I mean, we started in 1848 and got the vote in 1920. So that's 72 years of protesting and marching and making signs to try and get, the federal vote. Different states across the country got it state by state, but it took 72 years.
As we wrap up, I think about just the one of the things that grabs my attention is the fact that we are this is a mainstream pursuit. At one point, protest wasn't. Meaning, if you were protesting the Vietnam War or protesting suffrage, as you mentioned, civil rights, you would have some people that would be writing about it and maybe get a photo. But it has turned into a mainstream pursuit. Has design followed that suit? Are you seeing an evolution where now people are much more savvy or understand what design can do now that the whole world watches every time people gather?
Well, there's, images can go viral now. So that's a whole different thing. There's a whole series of posters made in Berkeley during the Vietnam War where, there were 5,000 posters in Berkeley. But now those posters can be seen around the world in a few seconds.
Is that good or bad? I mean, from a design standpoint, I would think that there's a lot more competition for that space, meaning everybody is now a protester or a designer creating signs. I mean, does it make the product, does it diminish the product or water it down that everybody wants that viral sensation?
No, the best images still rise to the top and cut through the clutter, I think. And, the resistance is the majority in this country right now. Nixon referred to the people who were silent as the silent majority during the Vietnam War, although I'm not sure if they were actually the silent majority or the silent minority. But right now we're definitely the majority. So people speaking out just reinforces the messages. The more, the better.
Author and New York designer Bonnie Siegler's new book is called Sign of Resistance, A Visual History of Protest in America. She is going to be on stage with her presentation tonight at the Morningstar Theater Space at 22 West Washington Street, right here in downtown Chicago, as part of an AIG Chicago event with Women and Children First. Bonnie, great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the headlines. And then U.S. women's hockey gold medal winner Kendall Coyne. Stay with us.
Megan Augusta. She scored earlier. Must beat Rooney to keep Canada's hopes alive. She is stopped. The United States wins gold in Pyeongchang.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. We can be
legends after. That was probably the best moment of the U.S. Olympics.
Hands down.
Of course, the women's hockey team, the U.S. Olympics, won gold in a shootout, beating Canada. How great was that, huh? How great was that? Dave Ennett.
I mean, it was tremendous.
Well, of course, the pride of Palos Heights, Kendall Coyne, was a part of that team. What a whirlwind 2 weeks it's been for her in New York City. They, last night, returned to the Chicago area. She joins us now on the Cochran Show. Kendall Coyne, thanks for calling in, being here today, and describe the feeling of being back home.
Well, first, thanks, Justin. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Andrea, for having me. I'm excited to talk to you guys again. I know I talked to you guys right after we won the first call back to the state, so I'm excited to be with you guys today. But it's just been overwhelming. The support has just been extreme. I'm so excited to be back in Chicago to share this experience with everyone here and just say thank you for all the support.
Kendall, it's such a cool picture that we saw when you guys were lined up outside the Stock Exchange before the opening bell with your whole team holding up the medals in front of the New York Stock Exchange. It was so cool. But describe it when you landed at O'Hare. I mean, you're back home in Chicago.
Yeah, it was surreal. I've been waiting for this moment for a long time. Even coming back 4 years ago after we brought home a silver medal from Sochi, I just had a horrible feeling, just like I failed everyone. And oh. I mean, I know they don't feel that way, but so just to come back home with a gold medal this time and just to see the support was so overwhelming. There's just no place like home and no place like Chicago. So just to see family and friends and fans and just people wanting to say thank you and congratulations was amazing. And I was really lucky to get out of New York as well.
Yeah, right. you just missed that second nor'easter in a week, I guess, that you were able to get out. But going through airports, making your way back, what was the most interesting or unusual reaction that you got from anybody, be it somebody you knew or a stranger coming up to you?
I would just say everything in its entirety, just people waiting for us at the airports with things to sign, people grabbing us for pictures and following us around a little bit, wanting to hear our stories. And women's hockey hasn't always received the respect it should, and so to finally see it coming full circle and this win doing that for the sport is awesome. But I think one of the top stories I've heard was when we were in New York at the Rangers game, a girl came up to us and said, I was outside playing roller hockey in the park and had a USA jersey on. Someone came up to me and said, thank you. Are you part of the women's hockey team? And she's like, no, but thanks anyways. And she's like, they were awesome. And it was just a complete stranger, and I thought that was pretty cool.
You know, for us in this area to hear something where it says that U.S. women's hockey may not be getting the respect it gets, I mean, there is so much history here from the team back in the 90s with Cammy Granato and what you guys did in Sochi, but also what you've done this year. It's amazing. I mean, do you feel more from this area because you're from here and that there is respect for what you do on the ice and what this team has been able to accomplish?
Oh, absolutely. I've always felt overwhelming support from the Chicagoland area, and everyone's been so supportive. I think a lot of, in part because of Cammy and what they did in 1998. So women's hockey's always been respected here. I would just say across the United States, that's where it was lacking. So when I came home, I knew the support was going to be overwhelming, and I'm just so lucky to be from the best city in the world. And I mean, everyone has just been so amazing and saying thank you and congrats. And I'm just trying to get back and like tell everyone how appreciative I am, but definitely is respected here in Chicago.
You're going to be back at Sandberg next week, Kendall, being honored. So go District 230. Mm-hmm. But I have to ask you, I'm so psyched to be talking to you on International Women's Day. Obviously, you are a role model for young girls and young women everywhere. Women more and more getting into the sport, and that's got to feel so good to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would just say to all the women and girls and everybody in any industry, in any sport, whatever you're doing, just be confident in yourself. It is tough. There's times where you face adversity. People always told me growing up, you're playing a man's sport. Why aren't you playing soccer like all your other friends? And it's because I love hockey. That's what I'm doing. It doesn't matter if I'm a girl or a boy. I'm going to do it because I love it. And I think, you know, girls and women can take that for anything and just be confident in who you are and, you know, chase your dreams and dream big and go for them.
You mentioned you were at the Rangers game. When are you going to get out to the United Center for a Blackhawks game?
Yeah. I know the Blackhawks are planning something. I think the plan is for Sunday's game against the Bruins.
Nice.
Oh, cool.
You know, Kendall, for you, tell us what do you have planned here back in Chicago? I mean, in Palos Heights, but also as Andre just said at Sandberg. I mean, what are the plans? I mean, it was such a whirlwind for the last 2 weeks of organized activities for the team. What's planned for you individually now that you're back home?
I think I'm just trying to go back to my alma maters, my Palos West Elementary, Palos South Middle School, and Sandberg, and then just trying to get back into the community. I'll do my girls' hockey camp later this summer. Just to try and give it back and do as much as I can. Probably do an autograph signing in the South Side somewhere. And then, yeah, I mean, my fiance enters free agency next week for the NFL, so a lot of things are kind of being put on hold to figure out where we're going to pack up and move to for the next year, and then come back to Chicago, obviously.
Yeah, congratulations. We saw you guys registered at the Bed Bath & Beyond in Orleans, so we're trying to figure out what you need the most. Seriously, the guys wanted to go measuring cups and butter dish, yeah. Kendall, but I'm like, come
on. I was butter dish,
You
Kendall.
Were butter dish. We're going to maybe do the sheets or something.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
You've talked a lot about what it means to put that USA jersey on, to be a part mm-hmm. of a gold-winning team, a team that will be remembered in Olympic history. Does that mm-hmm. has that sunk in yet, that you are the pride, not just the pride of Chicago, but that the entire country right now is all about what you guys accomplished?
Yeah, I think it sinks in day by day. I don't think it's completely sunk in, just because it's still happening now, being back in Chicago for the last about 12 hours. It's a tremendous honor. It's an amazing platform, and I think our team was a special group. I think a lot of us thought we were the underdogs going in, just because Canada has won the last 4 gold medals, but we were in the position we wanted to be in. We won the last 4 world championships, and we knew how special of a group we were. And I think we showcased that for the world to see, and so to see it come full circle and people realizing it is really special, and I know all 23 of us are excited to see what this gold medal brings to not only women's hockey, but just to the country. I think it's a time where light is needed and happiness is needed, and I think we were able to shed a little bit on February 22nd.
Wow, that's very well said. See, I was going to ask a question about Saturday Night Live, but now I think I'm just going to let it go after that. I mean, I assume you saw Hillary on SNL.
That was a great bit. Yeah.
Yes, she did a great job.
Oh, great. Kendall Coyne, the pride of Palos Heights, who brought home a gold medal with the U.S. women's hockey team. There's going to be a lot of opportunity to meet and greet with the fans now that you're back in town, whether it be at a Blackhawks game or an autograph signing or would you say Palos West in the elementary. You can find Kendall at different places. Kendall, we can't thank you enough for taking some time out. I know you just got back in town, but it means a lot to Chicago that we get to hear from you today. So thank you.
Yeah, and I want to just thank you guys again for having me and for all the support and just taking the time and welcoming me home, and I just really appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Kendall.
All right, get some sleep.
Yep. Thank you. See you, Justin. See you, Dave. See you, Andrea.
See you, Kendall.
Kendall Coyne.
She's awesome.
How great.
Oh, she's awesome.
That's so great. So great on International Women's Day to have.
She's so nice, and she's, because we all try and claim her. Orland, because of Sandberg, Palos, because where she grew up. So we'll just say, like, proud of the South.
How about Chicago?
Yeah. She seemed to claim Chicago.
She's the best.
Yeah.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman in for Steve Cochran. Harry Tynowitz is in for Wendy Snyder. Bill and Harry coming up in the 10 o'clock hour here. Great to sit in tonight. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, we had fun with you.
Thanks for coming
Justin.
In.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't need me. You guys can rock the spot without me.
We had a blast with you.
No, we'd much rather you be here.
Yes. Yeah, I'm good at pressing buttons.
There is that.
Wink, wink.
All right, so what do you guys got going on this weekend? What is the I know it's only Thursday, but for me, you know, I'm not going to see you guys tomorrow. So what's the extended outlook for a Dave Ennett weekend?
I'm going to go climb 180 stories,
that's right.
I think, this
week. That's right.
Just why not, right?
Yeah,
why not just try it out?
Got nothing else going on.
Do you, I mean, it all runs together for you, right? I mean, was it last weekend that was at Madison Square Garden?
We were in New York, got stuck by the storm for a couple of days. But now that's over. But, like, I'll be on I'll be working when, well, you won't be working, but I'll be working tonight over on WGN TV and tomorrow night. And then, and Andre will be there Saturday and Sunday, I'm sure.
Yeah, we're doing the Southside Parade. We are going to have a crew there, though, by you, Dave, on Sunday for the stair climb. Covering that. Southside Irish Parade will be out there on Sunday. And Saturday, you and I were just talking, Justin, the Home and Houseware Show at McCormick Place. We're going to be out there for weekend break. There's a lot of really cool new trends coming
out.
They
have a woman who does the keynote every year that I'm trying to get on the download because she's with the Color Institute. And she they predict and they talk about what colors are in what trend for 2018.
That's
cool. It's a big thing, and that's what she keynotes every year there. Lee, I think it's Eisenberg. At any rate, tremendous, tremendous speech, and I know nothing about color.
Color of the year for 2018. Do you guys have any guesses?
Bill?
Apparently.
I'm going to go Kelly Green.
Oh, no, but that's close.
Am I close?
I think teal was last year.
Was last year teal?
You might be,
I'm in the neighborhood.
Apparently, the Pantone color of the year for 2018 is ultraviolet.
Lee Eisenman. I said Eisenberg. Lee Eisenman.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. So you're going to see a lot of purples and plums for colors.
I was just going to say blue.
Right up your alley.
Do you, Justin, do what I do is once you find out what the color of the year is, I throw out all my current clothes and I go out and I shop.
I do one better. I don't throw it out. I re-dye.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I have a re-dye machine at my house.
Do you also, because what we've done in years past is whatever color our house is, we paint over it with the color of the year.
The outside, too?
Yeah, inside and outside. Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
Harry, how about you? Do you subscribe by what's the color of the year?
I am a big color of the year guy. We actually, in my house, we do color of the
year.
Color? Yes. We pick the hottest day.
Oh.
And then it's always that temperature at my house.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. And Harry, not to brag, but I will brag for you, has a color television at his house.
Yeah, that's nice. Do. Yeah. It's pretty cool. I hoped one day to get a remote for it.
Oh. I've heard much about this technology. I need to check it out.
It is fantastic. And at the end, when they sign off and play the national anthem, it is so cool.
You guys need to come to the Home show on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not just one of those pieces of cellophane that you can put over a black and white TV and it makes it look like it's a color TV?
No, that's not why we have cellophane in our house.
Okay. Like an overhead projector. Remember those?
I don't think you can give the reason. I think it's best you don't give the reason.
They watch slides.
Right.
Bill, Harry, what do you guys got going on tonight? Today.
Well, comedian Gilbert Gottfried will be stopping by.
That's
great. One of our favorite comics. He'll be by. We've had him on in the past. Yeah. Love Gilbert Gottfried. He's on at 10:35. And then a bunch of other fun stuff planned throughout.
Well, that was a really strong beginning to that cross. And then it's just kind of. And then we'll do stuff.
I always send Bill and Jasmine, the wonderful executive producer, like my ideas. So we'll see if we get through. We'll see if we get to any or all of the ideas.
Mr. Bertrand chuckling.
Yes.
Can I run one of Harry's ideas past you?
Because
I think this could either be, seriously, the greatest segment ever.
Or the most embarrassing.
Or the most embarrassing.
Okay.
Today's International Women's Day.
Okay.
So, Harry, please present your idea. Because if they say it's a go, it's a go.
Okay. Well, you could be any woman today. Who would you want to be?
So for the men only, on International Women's Day, if you could be any woman, woman that you admire.
And we can just
from
mock,
any
right?
From any generation?
From any generation. You could pick Helen Reddy.
I could pick Helen Reddy.
I like how he picked Helen Reddy for
I think most people will.
Right. Well, don't you see the resemblance?
I would stay
it's
in
uncanny.
This generation. I'd say Frances McDormand.
Frances McDormand is an interesting
choice. Well, that's just like because she's the it actress.
No, she's just so quirky, and she was great in Fargo.
Right.
Dave?
She speaks her mind.
How about Amelia Earhart?
Oh, that's a good one.
So you'd know.
Yeah, finally, once and for all, you would know.
Yeah. Aren't you the guy it took like 4 days on one of your Wildcat basketball trips, and now you want to go with Amelia Earhart somewhere?
Well,
man, you've got a lot of
time.
Wait,
I'm supposed to maybe.
Now, you're already
mock.
A woman, but if you could be a different woman, Andrea.
If I could be a different woman?
A woman other than yourself.
There's so many to choose from. Diane Sawyer.
Diane Sawyer is strong.
But excellent point. There are so many women to choose from.
Have her pocketbook. Right?
See, Bertrand texted me his answer. It's Lola Falana. Did you see that coming? I didn't.
Or Cicely Tyson or Lola Falana. Actually, I want to be Molly Pitcher.
Oh.
The Revolutionary War.
Pitchers and catchers report in 5 days.
I want to be Molly Hatchet.
And every tavern in America now, too.
So that's, yeah, you've got an hour on this.
I like
that's
it.
One
I
of
like
the things
it.
You may like you like it. Yeah. Andre says it's a go.
Thank you. It requires being secure enough in your masculinity.
Absolutely.
You know, which all guys should be.
Yes.
Especially on International Women's Day.
And all the women listeners and staffers and will be mocking you.
Bill didn't even realize there were women outside of America.
Not until today. International.
Before you get to the crosstalk, I just wanted to say I loved your headshot on the loop remembrance stuff.
Oh, I made a joke last night.
I saw it. Someone tweeted out your headshot and Wendy's headshot, and I made the joke. I said Wendy looks great, and I've never seen Bill without a hat.
Oh, is that right?
And that shot, the one shot, is like you without a hat.
Oh,
it was the whole thing.
He was born with a hat.
I know.
Yeah, I had a hat on when I was born.
The hat looks good. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. But it was a more formal Bill left.
Really? Yeah. I didn't see the picture.
It was on Twitter. Someone shared it.
I'll find it.
Isn't that crazy what the loop is doing?
I know.
And think of how the landscape in Chicago has changed for baseball fans, because now the White Sox are right here on WGN.
Yep. Yeah.
Cubs are on the score, and the Angels are on the loop.
You'll get that sort of thing.
I saw that on Twitter, too.
How about that? All right, we must break, because you don't want to get Steve Bertrand angry. So
no.
Take a break. Go ahead, Justin.
All right, go ahead.